The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.
Well, I think the case has already been made if you look at the polls. It was a rigged election. You look at the different states, the election was totally rigged. It's a disgrace to our country. It's like a third world country, these ballots pouring in from everywhere, using machinery that nobody knows ownership, nobody knows anything about. They have glitches, as they call them, glitches. The glitches weren't glitches. They got caught sending out thousands of votes, all against me, by the way. You know, this was like from a third world nation, and I think the case has been made, and now we find out what we can do about it. But you'll see a lot of big things happening over the next couple of days.
There's the president, the current president of the United States, and then the fake president before that talking about the most extensive voter fraud organization in American history. And then Donald Trump answering that. Well, not that specifically, but he's certainly off the cuff there. After a ceremony yesterday at the White House, he's updating viewers on where they are. He feels like they've gathered the evidence. And now we'll see in the next few days, some pretty big things happening. I told you yesterday about the case taken up by Sam Alito at the Supreme Court. I believe they're expecting the defense to file their brief this morning. And so we'll see. I'm not exactly sure as to whether this is something that the court will rule on just based on the briefs or if it's going to go to oral arguments. But it was interesting yesterday, Senator Ted Cruz, he's also an attorney from Texas, and he said on Fox News that the team for that that congressman in Pennsylvania that is filing this suit against the state of Pennsylvania and how unlawful Act 77 is. In any event, they contacted Ted Cruz, who said that he'd be happy to argue the case in front of the Supreme Court should it get to that point. And then this is what Ted Cruz had to say beyond that on Fox News last night, clip three.
I think the court should consider it. I have called on the court to do it. I think it's the right thing to do. There will be justices who would prefer to stay out of this, who would prefer to protect their own credibility, essentially to protect their backsides. I think that's the wrong thing to do here. I think when you look at a country where 39% of Americans right now believe this last election was rigged, that's a real problem for confidence in the integrity of our electoral system. And so I'm hopeful the Supreme Court will step forward to its responsibility and resolve this case and resolve other cases as needed according to law and according to the Constitution, to say this is a country where we respect the rule of law, where we follow the Constitution, not the momentary partisan swells of interest or passion you may see on either side.
And so he's saying he hopes the Supreme Court will take up this case, the one involving Act 77 that we talked about yesterday, and also that it would resolve other cases. Now, what's interesting, there was a late development last night. The state of Texas is suing four states, four of these swing states, Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And the state of Texas is basically challenging the election procedures in those states that were playing with the rules in the lead up to the election. Like Pennsylvania wasn't the only one. They did it in Georgia. They did it in Wisconsin. They did it in Michigan. And Texas didn't do that. They didn't do any of those things. They didn't change the rules unlawfully. And so now they're suing these other states saying, look, this election, it affected the entire nation. How can they get away with all of this unconstitutional activity? Where's our relief? Who's going to help us in this time of need? This is from Breitbart. It says, Texas argues that these states violated the Elector's Clause of the Constitution because they made changes to voting rules and procedures through the courts or through executive actions, but not through the state legislatures. It says, additionally, Texas argues that there were differences in the voting rules and procedures in different counties within the states. So just a big mess, like we've seen in Georgia and Pennsylvania, among others. It says here, finally, Texas argues that there were voting irregularities in these states as a result of the above. Now, what's, interesting about this case, a state suing four other states, as I understand it, I mean, that goes straight to the Supreme Court. You don't have to bog down in some lower-level court. It's going to go straight to the Supremes. Now, whether or not they take it up, I guess, that's the question. But if the... Really, it's a similar argument. It's a similar case as this single case in Pennsylvania. And so we'll learn a lot today about the most likely today, about the position of the Supreme Court. And you'll notice that Andy McCarthy, by the way, had a piece about how that, you know, some of these cases that are dealing more with the constitutional law are going to get more traction than the ones that are, you know, that are saying there's all this voter fraud, and there's this ballot stuffing, there's the problem with the machines and so on. And he was pretty dismissive of those kinds of cases last week. But where I think those cases really played a key role in all of this is it, like Rudy Giuliani said, he needed those hearings in Arizona and Pennsylvania and Michigan to just get the word out. Because the judges wouldn't hear the evidence. These people that were kicked out of the counting centers, they weren't given their day in court. They signed the affidavit. But then what do you do if the judge says, no, get this out of here. I'm not going to rule on this. Even when there's hundreds, thousands of affidavits. So Giuliani said he's keeping it out there in front of the public. And I know, there's lots and lots of people from the left and the right saying, just forget about it. It's time to move on. But there's still a lot of Americans, as Ted Cruz brought out in that soundbite, that believe the election was rigged. And so here comes the state of Texas, not so much focusing on the voter fraud, but saying, how could they change the rules? That violates the Constitution. This is from the lawsuit itself that Texas has filed. It says certain officials in the defendant states, that would be those four states, presented the pandemic as the justification for ignoring state laws. My father makes this point in his piece, why Donald Trump will remain president of the United States. So they used it as a pretext, the pandemic. It says the defendant states flooded their citizenry with tens of millions of ballot applications and ballots in derogation of statutory controls as to how they are lawfully received, evaluated, and counted. It says, whether well-intentioned or not, these unconstitutional acts had the same uniform effect. They made the 2020 election less secure in the defendant states. So it was less secure. It just opened the floodgates to voter fraud. So it doesn't address the specifics of the voter fraud, but it just points out the obvious. We didn't have security in this election. People don't trust the outcome here. A lot of people think it was rigged. So if most of the states obeyed the Constitution, if most of the states didn't go about illegally changing the rules regarding elections, then what do you do with the few states that did break the rules? Well, it says here, those changes are inconsistent with relevant states and were made by non-legislative entities without any consent by the state legislatures. The acts of these officials thus directly violated the Constitution. They directly violated the U.S. Constitution, in addition to their own state constitutions, like in the case of Pennsylvania. It says, finally, by these unlawful acts, the defendant states have not only tainted the integrity of their own citizens' vote, but their actions have also debased the votes of citizens in plaintiff state and other states that remained loyal to the Constitution. So you have those on the left arguing, well, there's no way Sam Alito or anyone could rule in favor of these lawsuits being filed because you can't disenfranchise 2.6 million voters. You can't just throw out ballots. That's a very undemocratic thing to do. And here comes Texas saying, look, we obeyed the laws. We went by the rules. We were loyal to the Constitution. And the actions of these four states, they actually debase the votes of our citizens. It's an interesting argument because it's, as I say, it's very similar to the Pennsylvania case, and that happens to be one that the Supreme Court, at least Sam Alito, is very much interested in, very much concerned about. Now, there's a bunch of other cases out there as well, as including Sidney Powell. All of her cases, I think she's filed in three or four different states. In Georgia yesterday, there was a state court that dismissed her her lawsuit. And here's what she said last night on Newsmax as far as the road ahead. Clip two.
Well, we're going to proceed immediately with an emergency appeal, and we expect to get relief in the Supreme Court. There should be at least three states before the Supreme Court with enough electoral votes to change the outcome before the end of the week.
So enough cases in the Supreme Court, she suggests, to change the outcome by the end of this week. Whether or not it's all solved by the end of this week, I can't see how that could happen. But going back to what the president said there in our opening, the next couple of days, we're going to see some pretty big things happening. Lots to report on this week, that's for sure. Speaking of Georgia, that's the state that dismissed Sidney Powell's lawsuit. There are Georgia officials all over the place. You've got the governor. These are all Republicans, by the way. They're establishment Republicans. They're never Trump Republicans. And they're out there doing everything that they can to talk about how perfect the election was in Georgia. And they're being caught in lies. I'll show you that in just a second. And the president's team has said, let's match. Secretary of State Raffensperger yesterday was talking about how careful they are to check the signatures. And yet, when they had the recount, they would not let. They would not let the Trump campaign have a signature audit. They're doing everything that they can to hurry it on through. Rush, rush, rush. Here's another official. I haven't given clips from him before. You've got the Secretary of State. We've heard him. We've heard from the governor. Here's the lieutenant governor. His name is Jeff Duncan. He's on CNN. They're all going to CNN, by the way, MSNBC. They're all going to the radical left-wing networks. They're all talking to the radical left media. That's telling in itself. But here's Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan on CNN last night, clip four.
Do you believe the election was rigged?
I don't. I'm proud to have worked hard with the Attorney General, Chris Carr, with our Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, and his entire team to put on what is a fair and legal election here in Georgia. We continue to chase down all the little one-off leads that we've got. I know the Secretary of State, the GBI, are working on one-off issues like we would probably see in any other election. But I believe the election was fair and legal.
That's the Lieutenant Governor talking about, well, there's a few one-off things here and there, but that's typical. We have that every election cycle. Now, when the subject is the upcoming election, well, you get a much more serious tone coming from the Secretary of State's office. We went through that last week. He has direct evidence of fraud going on. But here is the lieutenant governor. He says this was fair, this was legal. And as for the little tiny bit of corruption, well, we'll look at those on an individual basis. But certainly there wasn't enough. That's the message. Certainly there wasn't enough to overturn the result. Georgia, Vice President Biden is in the lead in Georgia by 12,000 votes. And previous recounts, even the ones that they rushed through, flipped a few thousand votes themselves. But they won't do the signature audit. They won't. They're out in full force. All of the spokespeople. Gabriel Sterling, we'll get to him in a second as well. But they're out in full force talking about how spectacular their performance has been. Here again is Governor, Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, clip 5.
This isn't a third world country here in Georgia. We've been running elections for a long, long time, and certainly we are working all together, and we got 159 counties, and certainly we all try to hold each other accountable and make sure our standards are as high and as modern as possible. And
they're all holding themselves accountable. You know, there's really two particularly ugly qualities if I can say ugly quality, of human nature at play here. There's the hatred, the animosity for this administration, President Trump's administration, President Trump, I guess, to be precise. And then there's also just the vanity of we ran this election and we did it flawlessly. What did Krebs have to say? The one that was over CISA, the one that was over the cybersecurity. Oh, I did it right. I did everything perfectly. These are not people that are going to rush to the microphone and say, you know what? We got it wrong. You know what? We better. We're going to go back and we're going to compare signatures more slowly. Because going back to 2018, going back to 2016, we were rejecting 2-3% of ballots just because of the signature matches. They didn't match. And this time it's 0.03. They just rushed everything through. And of course you had something like 8 or 10 times more ballots. Now you could argue that, well, they were just inundated with ballots. They didn't have the staff to even go through it the way that they should have. It would have been easier in 2018 or 16 because they didn't have nearly as many to go through. So you rush them on through. You rubber stamp everything. You rush to the microphone. You say everything's official. And we did a bang-up job. It was just perfect. Molly Hemingway had a piece yesterday about the video evidence. We went through that, I believe, on Friday's program. They're at the State Farm Arena. They were counting all of these ballots. And then everyone's told to go home at 10:30. And then there were just the four people left. And remember, they pulled out the suitcases. Okay, they come out. Everybody that says it's debunked now says, well, they weren't actually suitcases. They were cartons of some kind. So whatever the containers were, they were full of thousands and thousands of ballots. And they continued counting for another 2 to 3 hours when all of the media and the poll watchers were told to go home. So the radical left, very upset by the fact that that story got some traction last week on Fox News and elsewhere. So lead stories, this is a left-wing site that came out with I believe it was over the weekend, saying that, look, we've debunked this video. There's nothing to be concerned about here. And then you have the officials from Raffensperger's department, Gabriel Sterling and others. They're coming out, they're going through the video, they're saying, look, this is just normal. It's just normal for us to send people home, to pull cartons out from under the table. And so here's lead stories. And again, they're supposedly debunking this. It says here, Gabriel Sterling, so he's Raffensperger's spokesman, okay? Gabriel Sterling, a Republican and Georgia's voting system implementation manager. He's Georgia's voting system implementation manager. He told Lead Stories during a phone call on December 3rd that what can be seen on the video is normal procedure and nothing looks bizarre or odd. Nothing. Nothing looks bizarre or odd. Nothing to be worried about here. Nothing to be concerned about here. Here they are caught red-handed. And then they come out and say, there's nothing abnormal about this. This is just the way we do elections. This is how we count. It says here, election workers known as cutters because their job was to open absentee ballot envelopes and verify ballots for eventual scanning and counting were dismissed for the night sometime after 10 p.m. on November 3rd because their work for the evening had been completed. They finished their work. You see how the story is very different than it was on election night. Remember? Oh, yes. Molly Hemingway gets into that in her piece. But anyway, their job was done. They say here, those workers who remained were responsible for conducting the scanning portion of the process. So I guess the cutters, they were finished. And so the scanners hung around to continue with the count. It says, since ballots could not be left without being scanned overnight. This is a quote now from Gabriel Sterling. You've heard some clips from him before. He's the one that just was outraged by some of the criticism aimed at Republicans. He's the one that said, it has to stop. Donald Trump has to stop with this inflammatory rhetoric. And he's a never-Trumper. Just dig into his tweets, dig into his history a little bit. Despises Donald Trump. This is a quote from Gabriel Sterling. If you look at the videotape, the work you see is the work you would expect, which is you take the sealed suitcase-looking things in, you place the ballots on the scanner in manageable batches, and you scan them. Yeah, it's just normal. The article goes on and says this, Francis Watson, chief investigator for the Georgia Secretary of State. Now keep this in mind as you read any of these stories from the left-wing media about how everything was done perfectly. Who are they asking? Who are the ones in their stories? They're all the election officials. They're the ones running the election. And what are all of the election officials saying? We did it perfectly. There was nothing wrong with our election in Fulton County. There was nothing wrong at the State Farm Arena. So here you hear Gabriel Sterling. Here's Frances Watson, a chief investigator for the Georgia Secretary of State. So she works for Raffensperger. Both of them do. She told the Lead Stories during a phone call on December 3rd. Again, these are all their sources. These are some reporters that are really trying to get to the bottom of this. There's all of these incidents of fraud. And who do they call? They call Raffensperger's office. They talk to Raffensperger's people. And then they say everything has just been thoroughly debunked. Unbelievable. This woman says here, according to this interview on December 3rd, that the ballots were in standard containers and the work during the time in question had nothing to do with pulling ballots from under the table. She said this, here's a direct quote, there wasn't a bin that had ballots in it under the table. It was an empty bin and the ballots from it were actually out on the table when the media were still there. And then it was placed back into the box when the media were still there and placed next to the table. Okay, so never mind what your eyes see happening in that video that was thoroughly explained in that hearing last Thursday. Just take my word for it. Here's what it means. Here's what actually happened. Everything was carefully observed. The media were all around. There was no funny business. The article, Lead Story says, there was never an announcement made to the media and other observers about the counting being over for the night and then needing to leave. According to who? According to Watson. This is the chief investigator for the Georgia Secretary of State, Secretary of State Raffensperger. She says there was never an announcement made that, look, you've got to go home for the night. And in fact, Molly Hemingway brings this out in her piece. It was made all over the news. You have the lead Republican who tweeted out that night, Republican poll watchers were told to go home, and the counting continued. You have two people who've signed affidavits. That's coming under the threat of perjury if you're lying. They said, we were told to go home, and they continued counting. You have all of the news reports from ABC and elsewhere, whether in print, on media, video footage, and all of these reports saying that, well, we've got news out of the Fulton County counting district or the Fulton County State Farm Arena. They've told all their counters to go home, and they're not going to start until 8:30 in the morning. Look at that tweet right there from ABC, 10:30 p.m. Now, that aligns precisely with the video evidence, what you see happening at around 10:30. All these people just filing out, except for the four, and they continue right on counting. And you know what else that's interesting? The minute-by-minute count. It was at 1 or 1:30 in the morning where Biden had this huge spike. He had this huge increase in votes coming in Georgia, coming in Fulton County, after the counting supposedly stopped. That's what we were told on election night. That's what we've been told for weeks. And then the video footage comes out last Thursday. And now what are we told? Well, now we're told, hey, there was never any announcement for people to leave. And, you know, there were four people left at this corner or this quadrant, and everything was just normal. And there was observation. And oh, by the way, we've got a witness that's now come forward. And he was a watcher, and he said he was there for about an hour during that period of 2.5-3 hours. So there was some observation. I mean, there wasn't anything nefarious going on. Now, this video, I mean, the video's been thoroughly debunked. According to Watson, it says, who was provided information by the media liaison who was present, she said they just followed the cutters as they left. It says nobody told them to stay. Nobody told them to leave. Nobody gave them any advice on what they should do. And it was still open for them or the public to come back in to view at whatever time they wanted to, as long as they were still working. So they just, you know, they kind of wandered out. Nobody told them to do this or that. They could have come in and observed, I guess. But, I mean, what could we do? I mean, the counting had to continue. Nobody said the counting should stop. And everyone reported that night the counting was stopped. The counting wouldn't resume until the next morning at 8:30 a.m., the video evidence proves it. The news reporting proves it. The affidavits prove it. And then the lead Republican, his tweet from election night, it proves it as well. This is from Molly Hemingway. Her piece at The Federalist is, the Georgia vote counting video was not debunked. Not even close. Not even close. Hemingway, she looks at this claim about, you know, the election or the counting being called off for the night and what they're saying, this lead stories, the article that I just went through a bit of with you. But it says, Georgia Republican Party Chairman David Schaefer has consistently said that's what happened at State Farm Arena beginning hours after the election. What happened being they were told to go home. It says that claim, which he has repeated consistently, is backed by sworn affidavits. Well, some of this I've already given to you. But listen to this. It says the observers say that they arrived for their observation jobs around 8 p.m. They say in the first half of the 10 o'clock hour, a woman with blonde braids who appeared to be a supervisor yelled out to those present in the room that they would stop working for the night and would resume in the morning. The Republican poll watchers said they asked Fulton County election spokesperson Regina Waller questions about the status of the ballot count multiple times, but that she refused to answer. Lead Stories, however, says there was never an announcement made. I just read that to you. Molly Hemingway says, okay, so on the one hand, you have sworn affidavits from observers saying that supervisors told ballot counters to go home. And then she talks about all the media coverage and what Mr. Schaefer had tweeted out. And yeah, everybody's story lines up perfectly with what actually happened, except those in the Secretary of State's office. Wow. It says the Republican poll watcher story matches this election night reporting perfectly. It says local, you know, and added to this, by the way, all those reports about how that the counting had stopped, they also were talking about how that because of this big pipe burst, this big water main break, as if there was this tidal wave coming through downtown Atlanta and everybody had to get out. We now know the truth about that as well. It says, as planned, Fulton County will continue to tabulate the remainder of absentee ballots over the next 2 days. This is quoting from the county spokeswoman in a statement. It says, some debunking there, guys. The video supports the claim from the affiance. It says, incidentally, most of the linked stories include mention of a major election day story of a burst pipe delaying vote counting. Some even said it was reportedly a water main. In a new affidavit, the aforementioned Watson swore, our investigation revealed that the incident initially reported as a water leak late on the evening of November 3rd was actually a urinal that had overflowed early in the morning of November 3rd. It was a urinal overflow, not even a toilet now, a urinal that was overflowing. Listen to Jeff Duncan. Again, he's the lieutenant governor of Georgia, clip six.
And, you know, the unique thing here in Georgia is all eight statewide constitutional officers are Republicans, and yeah, we've got Republican majorities in the state Senate and state House. We understand how to govern with conservative values here. Governor Kemp has certainly put that on display for us. And so my encouragement is to keep focused. Make sure you redirect any of that energy towards the misinformation around election fraud. Focus it on telling folks why they're great leaders.
Now, that clip just blows my mind. We're all Republicans. We're all doing a great job. Governor Kemp's leading the way. And what we need to do, here's my advice to all of you watching this broadcast. What we need to do is to redirect some of that focus on the misinformation on election fraud, and instead focus it on telling folks why they are great leaders. Tell them why they're great leaders. It's as if they're infallible, I guess. They've done everything perfect. This is the most secure election in the history of the United States. This is the only time we've ever had an election like this with all of these tens of millions of ballots just mailed out all over the place. And everyone around the world, every nation that's ever gotten into this, seriously, mass mail-in ballots, they've eliminated the practice because it opens the way for so much fraud. And here you have to listen to all of these arrogant leaders, like the guy from DHS, like this lieutenant governor, get up on TV and tell us, those of us that are watching videos of these late night shenanigans going on with our own eyes. And we're seeing it. And the timestamps, they fit together perfectly with affidavits. They fit together perfectly with what was actually reported on election night. And they're telling us that, look, we, the dear leaders, we're perfect. We're perfect. This was totally secure. And look, this isn't just leadership we're talking about in Georgia. We're talking about conservative leadership. And the good governor, he's leading the way. And so I would tell people to stop focusing on election fraud and just focus on telling folks that they're great leaders. Andrew McCarthy, he had a piece on this lawsuit that's been filed by the Trump campaign in Georgia. He seemed to be seemed to be without much hope for this turning around a week or two ago. But this article, it takes a little bit of a positive tone. It says here, in the Peach State, the campaign is represented by different counsel than it has been elsewhere. The 64-page complaint is a linear, cogently presented description of numerous election law violations, apparently based on hard data. If true, this is Andy McCarthy, if true, the allegations would potentially disqualify nearly 150,000 illegal votes in a state that Biden won by only 12,000. So it's a pretty effective argument, according to Andy McCarthy. He, too, is a lawyer, an attorney. According to the complaint, the following were illegally permitted to vote. Now, listen to this. And keep in mind what all these Georgian officials are saying about this election. This is in the latest suit filed by the Trump campaign. More than 66,000 people were underage. They weren't of legal voting age. 66,000. He says at least 40,000 people who had moved across county lines at least 30 days before the election had failed to re-register in their new county, as state law requires. He says at least 15,700 people who had filed a national change of address form with the U.S. Post Office before Election Day. It says as many as 10,000 people, I'm rounding up or down here, but it says as many as 10,000 people who were deceased by the time of Election Day, including 8,700 who perished before the date the state accepted their vote. All these dead people voting, not just a two or three, not just a few hundred even. Thousands, thousands and thousands, 66,000 under the age of 18. It says at least 4,900 people who registered to vote in another state after their Georgia registration date, as many as 2,500 disqualified felons. These are all people who voted in Georgia, just one state, just the one state of Georgia. At least 2,423 people who were not registered in state records. At least 1,000 voters who gave only a post office box as their residential address in violation of state law. At least 395 people who cast ballots in a state other than Georgia. And then 98 people who registered after the state deadline for doing so. And yet, what do the officials come out and say? Hey, the video shows it was perfect. All of us in the Secretary of State's State Department, we can vouch for the fact that this was totally safe, totally secure, totally perfect. Here's Secretary of State Raffensperger himself talking about just how secure this election was. Clip 7.
We have now counted legally cast ballots 3 times, and the results remain unchanged. As Secretary of State, I have worked to secure the vote for all Georgians. On day one, we outlawed ballot harvesting. We strengthened signature match through the GBI training and moved towards an audible paper ballot system.
Wow, so they outlawed ballot harvesting. It's illegal. You can't even do it. And then he says that they strengthened the signature match. They strengthened it. Now, listen to Andy McCarthy's article. It says the Georgia complaint makes a convincing case that signature mismatches are a much bigger problem than Raffensperger has acknowledged. Here are the figures. In 2016, the complaint alleges Georgia disallowed 6,059 absentee ballots, and in 2018, a total of 7,889 were disallowed. This means the rejection rates, respectively, were 2.9 and 3.46%. So they were fairly close, you know, around about 3% of absentee ballots before COVID, before the crazy year of 2020, before all these Dominion machines were added. You had just normally, the signature match wasn't there. It wasn't right for about 3%, so they had to be cast out. It says here, in 2020, due to the COVID-19-based liberalization of absentee voting, the total number of mail-in ballots was 1.3 million, five times the 2016 total, and four times the 2018 total. Yet, in 2020, the state disallowed fewer ballots, 4,471, a rejection rate of just 0.34%, i.e., 10 times lower than the 2018 rejection rate. So here is Secretary Raffensperger saying, hey, we have strengthened the signature match requirements. Even as the Trump campaign keeps saying, look, if you're going to recount, let's match the signatures. Let's examine the signatures. To which Raffensperger's department has continually and repeatedly said, no, we're not going to do it. He's there. He's saying all the right things. We've counted it three times now. We keep getting the same results. And oh, by the way, I've run a tight ship here. It's very secure. In fact, I've strengthened the signature match requirement. I strengthened it. 0.34%. McCarthy says, to put it mildly, it strains credulity to claim the rejection rate is accurate. The plausible explanation for the sudden plunge in the rejection rate is that the state was so overwhelmed by mail-in ballots and the consent decree made signature matching so much more resource intensive that fraudulent ballots were missed. As the complaint asserts, if the 2020 election were consistent with Georgia's rejection rate from the past 4 years, i.e. between 2.9 and 3.4%, then somewhere between 38,000 and 45,000 ballots would have been rejected, not a mere 4,471. That's Andy McCarthy. A lot of these facts and figures. And yet the officials, they're out, as I say, in full force. Gabriel Sterling, the chief investigator from Raffensperger's office, the good lieutenant governor, Raffensperger himself, Secretary of State, the governor, Governor Kemp, all of them, staunch Republicans, conservative leadership, all of them ramrodding these results through. Even as the people of Georgia are angry. You saw the numbers that were at that rally on Saturday night. I played a couple clips yesterday. The people, the will of the people. I saw a story the other day where Governor Kemp had removed his email address from one of the state websites. I wonder why he would take his email address down. What does that suggest about the kinds of emails he's getting right about now? Here's the Secretary of State, one last clip from Mr. Raffensperger, clip 8.
Truth matters. Today, the Secretary of State's office will be recertifying our state's election results. Then the safe harbor under the United States Code to name electors is tomorrow, and then they will meet on December 14th to officially elect the next president.
These people, they want to get this over and done with as fast as possible because with each passing day, more evidence, like the video from last Thursday, more evidence turns up that proves they've been lying. That proves there was voter fraud on a mass scale. That proves they went and, just like in Pennsylvania, they went and changed the rules before the election. They want this to hurry up and be over because it's exposing them. It's exposing their lawlessness. When we come back, we'll talk about root causes. I touched on this just briefly at the end of yesterday's program. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Do you believe the United States of America has been mainly a positive force in the world for most of its history? Do you believe that America was at one time a great nation? The United States of America was founded on many biblical principles that were incorporated into the Constitution. This lent to its success and positive influence in the world. But the America of then is not the America of today. To anyone examining the current state of America, this should be alarming. It has been a great nation in time past and is experiencing a temporary resurgence in these end times, but it will only be exactly that, temporary. Our free booklet, Great Again, will explain America's status. It will prove that God has been intimately involved in the rise and resurgence of America under President Donald Trump. It will also explain why God is saving America temporarily, how he was doing it, and what is yet to come in America. There is a spiritual dimension to America's rise and decline as a superpower. This free booklet will explain this dimension and how God will soon make America truly great again. Request your free copy of our book, Great Again, at our website, thetrumpet.com.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
We were there for a hearing on motions to dismiss filed by every organization that you can imagine, even as interveners, where they had no place to be in our case, but the DNC and Perkins Coie law firm and everyone aligned on the left decided to file briefs in our case, and the court let them do that.
That's Sidney Powell explaining on Newsmax last night why her case, or how her case, was thrown out of that Georgia court. And she was basically saying they had all the, on the other side, they had all these interveners coming from the DNC, that's the Democrat Party, and then Perkins Coie, that's the left-wing law firm of Fusion GPS fame, funding the Steele dossier. It's the same people. It's the same deep state. They want all of this just thrown out of courts. They want to pressure judges and everyone else. They want to pressure politicians, Democrats, Republicans, to just pile it on in the hope that it'll go away. Because the longer it stays around, the more is being exposed. I played that clip for you yesterday from Rudy Giuliani talking about how that this goes all the way up to Washington, D.C. Now, when pressed, he said, who in Washington, D.C.? Who's running this fraud? Who's trying to steal the election? Who's coordinating all of this? Giuliani says it was the same strategy in like 5-6 states. So who's behind it? They didn't just all randomly decide, hey, let's shut everything down and then bring in the fraudsters and all the fake ballots. He knew enough, though, or knows enough, to say that it goes all the way to Washington, D.C. I went through that piece with you last week about how that Obama's the first president to leave office and to stay right in Washington, D.C., the first one in, I think, over 100 years. Lee Smith had an article last week. This has been in the news stack for a few days now. But he talked about how that Joe Biden is if he gets back in office, he's planning to reinstitute the JCPOA, the Iran nuke deal. It's just going to revert back to what it was in 2016. And Lee Smith, he says this regarding Obama. The Iran deal, Obama's Iran deal, was the costliest mistake of his presidency for the peoples of the Middle East. The premises on which it was based were proved false. And yet Joe Biden can't wait to re-enter the JCPOA, with Secretary of State apparent Anthony Blinken pledging to keep non-nuclear sanctions intact, signaling his clear intention to lift nuclear-related sanctions against Iran. And so you know from the beginning, we talked about this before on this program, from the beginning, Obama came in back in 2009, and he reached out, you know, a big Cairo speech in June of 2009. He reached out to Iran, and he started really sticking it to Israel. He just turned the Middle East on its head. Lee Smith says, the Iran nuclear deal was never about the Middle East, which opposed the deal from the start. Not just Israel, the Middle East opposed it. Saudi Arabia opposed it. It never was about the Middle East. It was about America. The Iran deal was a part of the worldview that Obama lays out in his new memoir when he writes that he isn't yet ready to abandon the possibility of America. Smith says that's an interesting locution for a man who was elected president of America twice. What does it mean? This is from Obama's book. What does it mean that he's not yet ready to abandon the possibility of America? Well, this is the same man, keep in mind, that vowed to fundamentally transform the United States. And he's writing in his memoir saying, I'm not yet ready to abandon the possibility of America. Lee Smith says, what Obama means is that he understands himself as the president of an America that has not yet been realized. This is pretty insightful, coming from Lee Smith. The flawed Americans of the here and now may have elected Obama president twice, but they also cling to things like national borders, religion, and guns. Obama's America is a place without borders. It's a country in which big tech oligarchs, social media warriors, and powerful bureaucrats join hands to destroy those who don't follow a media-enforced ruling class consensus. See, he's a good globalist, and more, he's a Marxist. It says the wealth of Obama's America isn't in the hands of families of any race, color, or creed. It belongs overwhelmingly to an oligarchy that partners with the Chinese Communist Party, which uses its massive pool of slave labor to produce cheap goods that destroy hundreds of thousands of small businesses and reduce millions of American workers to penury. See, this is what President Trump, when he was out campaigning in 2015 and 16, this is what he said he was going to come in and change. I'm going to bring these jobs back. They're selling you out, these people. He said at one point, he said that if it wasn't for Obama and Biden and their failed policies, Donald Trump, he said he never would have run for president. I'm here, he said in one of the debates. I'm here because of your failures. Listen to this conclusion from Smith. He says, Obama understands that his prophetic vision of a new world is scary to lots of people who live in the contingent historical construction called America. And again, this is also revealed in some statements he's made to some of his donors and such, where he's talked about, look, we've got to, my father's written about this before, I forget the exact nature of the quote, but he basically said, look, what the party's doing, the Democrat Party, it's coming across a little bit too extreme to the average and ordinary American, so we've got to be more subtle. We've got to be sneakier. This is the puppet master speaking. It says here, and the Iran deal is a central component of that vision, or else his aides working through Joe Biden wouldn't be so keen to make it stick. The point of empowering a regime that is anti-American at its core is to help bring the America that is to heal so it can be transformed into the America that Obama envisions. He says, finally, if it brings chaos and war to the Middle East, why are their lives of Israelis and Saudis worth more than the lives of the hundreds of thousands of Syrians who died last time in the service of one man's obsessive vision? So that's Lee Smith, just to tie that in with what Giuliani had to say and with what we've commented on here in the last couple of weeks. He's out there, he's on his book tour, he's been given a lot of press, a lot of free publicity. And here it coincides with this election. Even the statement that he made about how that he'd love to sort of run the presidency from his basement. all of them occasionally saying the silent part out loud, as I've said. Quite revealing. Well, I don't have time to get to a few other quotes that are also, or a few other clips, I should say, that are also quite revealing. But let me just conclude at least with this from General Flynn. This is the one that Obama worked to get fired early on in the Trump presidency. And he was asked in this exchange about why the Obama people would come after him. Here's clip 13.
President Obama knew that Donald Trump was going to have me in some capacity in his administration and likely either as a national security advisor or in some other position. So clearly, right. when he chose me to be the national security advisor, they knew that their little plan of spying on Donald Trump would fall apart and many other foreign policy blunders that they got our country into.
And he goes on to talk about the Iran nuke deal, but he knew, they knew they wouldn't be able to get away with all the lawlessness if Flynn stayed in his position as national security advisor. So he was out in just 23 days. Same people then that are working against the president now. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Email us, td@kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.